You can throw out great, and you can throw out majestic, leaving you with Tad and Moon.
End of discussion. You've got your two horses. One of them's the winner.
I don't know where Moon ran. He's probably still out there. Yeah, he ran up the track. But that's very typical. Your second best win horse rarely finishes second. And so that's the way that kind of thing can be used. You look up, and I wouldn't get too fine on it. If no horse had come from further than, let's say, 1 1/4 back, I'd still accept Moon at 1.44. No, just remember, the program's just giving you an estimate. But on Synergism, that estimate was not particularly accurate. On Synergism 2, which is what you're looking at here, that we've upgraded to, it has become very accurate. It's surprisingly accurate. And if you don't get, again, too rigid about it, don't say, well, this horse is .07, beaten length too far, he's out. No, come on, get real here. But it's an incredibly valuable tool, and I think it's one that is overlooked a lot, and I would definitely pay a lot of attention to it. Anything else? Yes, sir. You're looking for internal consistency. No. All right. Who typed this one? I did. Dr. Sarton thinks X is great. Dr. Sarton thinks the whole methodology is great. He invented it. He named it. You know, come on. But in my case, I have found that factor X is less important than the big three. And if you pin him down, he'll tell you the same thing, actually. Factor X can be very important. The problem with factor X is just kind of in and out. It's actually the first factor that Howard ever developed. And Huey Maul almost got thrown out of Las Vegas running a service using nothing but factor X. But it works at some tracks, not at others. It works in the Pacific Northwest. They just live and die by it, particularly when it gets real muddy. They love that factor X. It's a horse that can accelerate in the goo and finish in the goo. And that's how you win those races up there. Here, maybe yes, maybe no. All I can tell you is track it. The answer is I don't know how important it is to you because I don't know where you play. But try it. The reason it doesn't calculate at all is the little computers are kind of limited in their readouts. There's just so many they can give you. And whoever wrote the original Phase 3 program for the Sharp computers did not include it. It is included on the big machines. The problem gets to be after a while, if you look at Synergism here, it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Can anyone look at 8? 8 columns, you know, 5 rows and all that sort of stuff and say, whoa, wait a minute, that's a lot of numbers. That's 40 numbers to look at. And can anyone just sort of take that, the totality of all those numbers and look at them? I can't. With 3, I can't. And those are the 3 I know early, W, and sustained. With tracking nothing else but those 3, I can win at any track in this country. With factor X, I don't know that. Therefore, it does become a secondary number.
With all of them, though, you do want to keep track of them because there'll be times where, because of weather conditions or whatever, one may become very, very prominent, as Dick has said. And to try to narrow it down, you know, if you're here at this point, these are the 3, you know, again, get rid of rigidity, because if you just narrow it down to 3 right now, there's all kinds of chances that you may lose money you ought to be picking up. I talked to some people earlier this year. We had sort of a monsoon season around here in June, and one fellow had a program he was working with, and it was all over the place as far as his usual indicators. And I talked with him, and we looked at his record, his
Pearlhammer
model. Thank you. I was going to come up with it.
We had every faith.
There was one factor that would have won 2 out of 3 races cold. You know, but it was not one of his usual factors that he looked at. But it was down there. Now, he'd been looking at these same things, scratching his head, and going, how come I'm not winning? because he wasn't looking at all of his model. So, you know, from time to time, different things will come and go. But
it's the same with late pace. Late pace is actually taken from the UltraScan program. And when they say late, they mean seriously late. This is the horse that's running the last 100 yards. And at some tracks, at some times, at the fairgrounds in Louisiana, when it rains, you bet your top two late pace horses, because that's what that track requires. But at Santa Anita, if you erase that from every readout I ever had, I wouldn't notice. I just have a look at it. Who cares what they're going to do? It's very rare at Santa Anita to see a horse pass from the stretch. It's a very early track. And I've learned that. The nice part about the methodology is it's so flexible. You have the tools that with just a week of work, or maybe less, a few days of work, you can find out exactly what your track is requiring. Exactly. And now, then you have the tools to figure out which horse in this race meets those requirements. You can customize the methodology to the point that it is just dialed in for your track. And you're very fortunate back here on the East Coast. Most people don't think so, but you're very fortunate because you see so many shippers. And that's really neat. I see two or three shippers a week in Southern California. Our horse colony is very stable. You see two or three shippers a race back here.
Is that an intentional pun? Horse colony is stable?
Sorry. No, it was not. It was an unintentional pun, but only a warped mind would notice. So, you know, that by developing a profile for all of these tracks and knowing what the requirements are from, like in this race here, I show you, we had a Meadowlands horse. I think all the rest were coming from Monmouth. Yeah, all the rest are coming from Monmouth, but now we have a Garden State horse. Two shippers. Now, I need to be able to know how to understand those. Now, I was pretty fortunate because this was the second race I'd ever seen. I did know how they ran. I turned and I asked Michael, how do these horses run? But you don't always have that luxury, and neither do I. When we blew into Arlington, Michael didn't know how they were running. We didn't have a local guy there. He wasn't there the first day we went to the track. Our local guy was doing something else. And we had no idea. We did after three races, though. So. And we nailed them. Yes, sir?
Could you speak about using setup times for synergism, too?
No, it's not really for beginners. Yes, sir.
The numbers next to the weight, are they only in synergism? I'm not familiar.
Oh, those are what's called PBS numbers, and you will be by the time you leave. PBS is a rough and ready kind of way to use the speed rating balanced with the second call to determine contenders, and it has proved to be very reliable. On your question, I didn't really mean to jump on you that way, but what the hell, it was so fun. How many in here are using synergism? Oh, hell, I'll answer. The setup, there's two ways to do a setup. One is the way it's in the manual, and it says take the most common distance. Let's look at this race. It would be 6 furlongs at Monmouth, right? We have two of those, as opposed to one at the Meadowlands and one at Garden State. Obviously, we're not going to count Moon and Ted twice because they come out of the same race. Therefore, what you would enter is 44 and 1, 111. And then for a second line, you'd enter 44 and 1, 110, 2. What synergism would do is average those for you, give you 110, 3.5, and use that. That's a perfectly valid approach. There's another one that people, when Jim Bradshaw and Howard wrote the matchup manual, started predicting what the pace of the race was going to be. Michael has talked and written about being able to predict what the pace is going to be. You're going to have to do that to do your PBS numbers, at least for the second call. So you just take one extra step and predict. What I did was I looked at this race and I said, I predict this race is going to run in 44 and 1. And I said, well, how fast is it going to close? I don't think a 111 is going to do it. But I don't think it's going to necessarily have to go 110 too. So I chose a 1:10.3. Now, do you think that tenth of a second in there made a difference? No. The difference between 1:10.3, 1:10.3 1/2, that's a tenth of a second. It's insignificant. So I find it easier to use what I think the race is going to run today. And it's particularly good, let's say the track was kind of slow today, or these were all different chippers and things like that. I don't want to enter in times that I don't think are realistic today. I thought those times were realistic. Was I right? 44.3, 111.2. No, I was not. But obviously the horse got away with a little softer pace. And something that I didn't understand at the time that I did this race was Monmouth had been extraordinarily fast for a couple weeks there in early June. And I don't know why. It either got hot or cold or the fog lifted or something. But I think that probably the 44.3, 111.2 is probably a more typical time for this class. I don't know. They just slowed down. But that, as long as you get realistic-looking numbers in there, because those numbers are going to be used to match all your shippers. And that's another thing. If you don't have any shippers, just put any numbers in the world in there. It doesn't matter. They won't be used. But that's more or less how you'd use those setup times. And so if you're looking at shippers, and you guys almost always are, I would try to get as realistic as possible on those numbers, what you really expect this race to run. And in this case, the a 44 and 1, 44 and 2, 111 would have been more realistic. I don't think it would have changed the outcome much. Yes, sir?
In reference to the setup times, if you have today's race is 7 furlongs, and none of the entrants has a 7 furlong race, would you pass the race?
No, absolutely not. Set it up in the most common distance. Now, again, if you're going to predict what it's going to run, just put in a 7 furlong prediction. And don't worry about it. But that's not how I would do it with synergism. In that case, what I would do is, let's say that this race was running 7 furlongs. I look, I've got nothing but sixes. I would set it up as a 6. I put my track record in as the 6 furlong track record, and I'd put in my setup times off 6. If there were a couple 6.5 scattered in here, I'd still set it up as a 6. Because that's my most common distance.
And when it asks you distance of today's race, lie to it and tell it 6 for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We've had people who told it 7 and then duly gone in and put in the 6 for long things.
And, oh, yeah. And then, whoa, these guys running.
Yeah.
And it makes the shippers look like absolute world beaters.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Back shortly after, or just about the time the Belmont opened,
you pig.
There was one race where my 5 supposed contenders came from 5 different distances and tracks.
Uh-huh.
I wrote to Purdy, and I never got a response, even though I sent a stamped address envelope.
Yeah, well, Bob's like that.
What the devil do you do in a situation like that? I know I can lie about the track.
Okay.
I can lie about distance. You know, I had 6.
All right. Okay. No first thing. Okay. No first thing. That's a low percentage bet. On the other hand, know that everyone at the track is saying, what the hell is this? I don't understand this. And you have better tools than they do.
Mm-hmm.
Those races, you may only win 50% of them, but you'll probably find your average mutual $14 or $15. It's usually worthwhile to take a swing at those. What you would do is, what I would do, and I can't answer for Bob, what I would do is I would predict what I think the race will run in today. Just, if I had to make it up out of the sky, I'd do it. I'd use the matchup concept. I'd say, okay, I think this race is going to run in 45-4, 111-1, whatever. I put that in, and there you go. I would probably call one of them not a shipper. Or you can call them all shippers if you want. When you call them all shippers, you're sort of just going back to the Meridian variant. But the Meridian variant is, it's not chopped liver.
I guess you do that and call Bert and say a prayer.
Well, it depends on what you look at. What would you rather have, a high win percentage or a high average mutual? Because I guarantee you'll never get them both. If Every year I hear it on the phone, just like clockwork. In April, in late March and April, the people will be calling and saying, "Ah, Santa Anita, terrible, terrible, terrible. So predictable out there. Everybody's paying $6. By the time they get to Hollywood Park, it gets even worse. Small fields. Hollywood Park is the most consistent track in the country. It has not rained during the entire 89-day Hollywood meet in 3 years. Not one day of rain. They know that track. It's beautifully maintained. And there's lots of 480 horses out there. Now, everyone says, oh, you can't make money out there. That's baloney, because I do every year. On the other hand, around right the day after Christmas is a holiday in Southern California. That's when Santa Anita opens. And it's sort of our rainy season, as rainy as it gets. And so in December and January, we'll have several days of rain. And people will say, oh, you can't handicap in the mud. Who knows how a horse is going to run? Hadn't seen mud in 7 months, and they put it on the mud. Oh, it's terrible. And they complain about that, and yet the mutuals are very high. You never get it both ways. If it's easy, it's not only easy for you, it's easy for everybody. A lot of people want all their ducks in a row. The easy races are like this Tad. I think Tad is about as easy a race as you're likely to find. That's why I use this example. It's not a challenge, but it only paid $7.60. I guarantee you, at Santa Anita or Aqueduct, the horse pays $2 less than that.
I'm not afraid of sitting in purgatory for another week and a half or another life.
Why in the world would you?
At the beginning of a Belmont season, you're getting them coming up from the south. You're getting them coming from Aqueduct.
Okay. You have two choices. You either sit and watch them and let all those juicy prices go by, or you beat your head against the wall and you bet them and know that your win percentage is only going to be 45 or 50%. It comes back down to almost a personality question. You're going to see two players in here that are complete opposites. One you've already met, Dr. Sarton. The other's Tom Brohammer. Dr. Sarton never passes a race. If it's not a maiden with a first-time starter in it, he bets it. The tractor's the plow. He'll go 3-5 on the one. He will bet everything. Tom Brohammer won two races a day. On the other hand, Dr. Sarton pays $15, $20 a race. When Tom walks up to the window, he'll put $300, $400, $500 down. The whole different philosophy involved. At the end of the month, amazingly enough, they both have about the same amount of money in their pocket. Which is right. There is no right. There is no right way to handicap when all these horses are coming from every which way. My own personal answer is, yahoo, dive in, Bubba, yeah. Let's go for it, because I love those $15 horses. On the other hand, I can take five losses in a row and not blow up. I'm bulletproof in the methodology. I believe in it with all my heart, with all my soul. This is the best way to handicap, and I can lose some races, and it won't bother me. If losing races eats you up inside, then you're going to have to wait for it to calm down. But when it calms down for you, it's calmed down for everybody else. Just remember, pace handicapping is not a dark secret. It's been talked about since the turn of the century, at least. The racing form has been printing these internal fractions for a long time. People have been using them. You're not the only one out there with eyes. And so when it gets to be easy, gets to be smooth, the prices get to be low. So pays your money, takes your choice. And the real answer to that question is try it and see how much money you make. And then try it when it smooths out and Belmont gets a lot easier and see how much money you make. I know people on the East Coast that stop for the Aqueduct Inner. They will not play the Aqueduct Inner. And yet Mr. Maine here kind of likes the Aqueduct Inner.
My Finger Lakes away from Finger Lakes. Yeah. You know?
Does he have a high win percentage? No. Does he have a high average return on investment?
I hover around 70%, and I can go down to 66 or up to 75, and the money stays about the same. It just doesn't matter. Because what Dick's saying is exactly right. You know, when there are more it's a signal noise ratio thing. You know, when there's more noise, the signal becomes tougher for a lot of people to see. The thing is, though, the more you work with the methodology, it just isn't the case that there are a lot of days that's so tough, you know, or I had a horse that paid $37.60, and it was a 1-1-1-1-1-4 on the program I was using. You know, and that's not being a master of ferreting information out of the thing. It just screamed, there it was.
Time, I think I had five contenders,
yeah.
Different distances, different.
Well, make one up and go for it.
That's an answer to your question right there. That was the first time that happened. You know, it's a 0.1% of every day at the race is kind of occurring.
You know, but you ask questions.
So that race you go.
Have enough stuff in your mind, in your mental bag of tricks that
yeah.
If you ever see it again, you can come up with
yeah, well,
yeah, and that's it. You take
remember it.
Do something reasonable with the setup times and take your best shot.
Yeah. Okay, you should no longer be beginners. You'd be ready to start learning. When you leave here Sunday night, Monday, whenever you leave, you're still not going to be masters of this. At one time, about 1983 or 1984, we could come in and present the entire Sarton methodology in a weekend. We lost that ability about 1985, not because we slowed up, but because there's simply much more to present. By now, there are whole aspects of the methodology that we're just going to have to glide right over. So you're still going to be beginners, and you have a lot to learn. That's why people keep coming back to these things over and over and over again. There's always something more to learn, and that's the challenge. If it was perfected and perfectible, and I could say, okay, here's a rule book, learn this, memorize it, and you go out, you'll win 70% forever with an average mutual of $9.60. Oh, it would be maybe kind of nice, but it would also be kind of boring. Yeah, I know, everyone says, oh, well, I'd like to be bored that way. Yeah, you think so. Hey, I happen to know where you can get a job that pays, you know, $10 an hour and cutting lawns or doing all things. Go down to McDonald's and say, wow, that looks pretty good. No, it doesn't. Not after a couple of years. How many of you really love your jobs? You make good money at them, don't you? But do you love them? Are you passionate about them? I worked at a job I hated for 10 years. I was pulling down a very nice salary for the last few of those years, and I still hated the job. Turned out the money didn't matter. The challenge matters. So be prepared to be challenged this weekend. Don't be embarrassed. Particularly if you're a beginner, we're going to be talking about things that just simply don't make sense to you. And I can distinctly remember my first methodology seminar, sitting in the back, wondering, what is that man talking about? And I was, at the time, I was a professional reviewer of horse race systems and methods for Gambling Times magazine. I thought I at least understood the language of horse racing. I thought it was how I earned my money, was manipulating that language. And I could not figure out what they were talking about. They were going on and on about ultrascan and yes, no, and no, no. And what are they doing? Well, luckily enough, we've kind of passed through that, but we're in other phases, and you'll hear it talk of things that don't make sense to you. Don't be afraid to put your hand in the air and say, wait a minute, you missed me on that one. Because if we start, it gets cumulative. And once you drop out, we're going to add a lot more information later on that you're not going to be able to use and understand. Don't expect, though, to go away from here an expert. But expect to go away here an informed beginner. Because you can take the information that we're going to give you this weekend and walk into any racetrack in the United States and start winning money. Now, later on, you'll win more money. Later on, it'll be faster. Later on, it'll be easier. But this weekend, we're going to give you the tools to become winners if you'll just listen and accept them. And we'll see you at 6 o'clock tonight. Thank you.
Anyone not now a client of Dr. Sarton should contact the Inland Empire Institute at 1390 East 6th Street, number 5, Beaumont, California, 92223. Thank you.